Slå kåla sino. Slå kålan och tog sens. La akadax. Ka ax el. Akestomix. Ka ax el akestominoto. Raven, restore my sight. Let me see what has been hidden with my eyes. Show me the ones to watch. Show me the ones that can do the jobs they are given. Show me the ones who can help me take them down. Give me a pool to choose from. Show me some who are worthy. Yes. Yes. Zenbubble. Cypher. Vitus. Carpenter. Boombox Mike. Star Dancer. Graggy Hearns. Wait, are you sure? Graggy Hearns? What kind of a name is that? Fine. Please continue, Pop Girl. Captain Calico Jack, Samriel, and Oberon, Caliburn, Brick, yes, more! Sadrazam, Faster Nate, Uncle Elwin, oh! Vlad the Mad, Spoon Man, K-Sim, Riptide, Banhammer. What's that? You sound different now. Speak up. Mr. Pink? You think he's worthy? He already works for... Damn it, Pink! Stop whispering your name at me! I told you never to interrupt me while I'm scrying! And you've been recording this? And airing it? Oh, fraggity frag! Now the bird is gonna get all feather hurt and not talk to me for a while. You idiot. Drek. Well, since you're here, we might as well get some more truth out there. If I catch Raven crap for this, it's coming out of your retainer. Coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix, this is the Anarchy in Podcasting Network, and I am Opti. Welcome to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. I promised last time that I would fill you in as to who won the 2057 UCAS election, and so I will. Without further ado, the ugly truth is the winner of the 2057 election and new president of the UCAS is Dunkles on the Great Dragon! Crap. Elected on August 7th with his running mate, Kyle Hefner, Big D made history that day. Not too terribly far away, Halifax, Nova Scotia experiences riots, which lead to frenzied mobs pushing a truck onto the runway, causing the crash of a Boeing 707. Completely unrelated, I'm sure. Well, except that there were riots everywhere else that day because of the results. Just 2 days later, on August 9th in D.C., President-elect Dunkelzahn and Vice-President-elect Kyle Hefner get sworn into their offices. Later, they both attended the Mrs. Grunland's Peanut Butter Cookie Inaugural Ball held at the Watergate Hotel. As Dunkelzahn settled in and was about to drive away, the limo he was in exploded at 10:23 p.m. Immediately afterwards, an astral rift opened up in the airspace above the explosion. Big D was pronounced dead at 11:58 that night. But the first of more than 500 claims of responsibility was made to the FBI only 5 minutes after the explosion. The first was from a group of terrorists called Red Dawn, which claimed they fired the fatal bullet. But since there was no bullet, they were dismissed as readily as almost all the others, whose details didn't match up with the evidence. Now, here's a couple of guys I tracked down to show the range of theories about who killed Big D, from the political to the bizarre.
Listen up, Opti. I've got the real story about Dunkelzahn's assassination. It was Kenneth Brackhaven. He used his high contacts in the defense industry. He used a self-forging fragment nuclear warhead with a magical detonator rigged up to his limo. Now, the defense industry liked Big D enough, but Brackhaven was desperate enough to call in all his favors from his Black House buddies to make it happen. And you know what? He had a good reason. The world's in a much better place without Dunkelzahn running things in the UCAS. It was for the best. Don't dare let anyone else tell you otherwise.
There's one view, Crows. Brackhaven. I can believe it. But here's another.
Yeah. Okay. I know what I saw. It was the insect spirits. The bugs, right? Initial blast, what you saw, that was a fake. A magical projection. It fooled all of our recordings. You know, there was a second blast. Ripped the limo apart. I saw some... Oh, I saw it. It was some blobby thing full of filthy insect larva things bubbling. Bubbled up from the wreckage. I'll never unsee. A moment later, they fizzled out in the thing in the sky. That happened. I know I can't confirm this, but a donkey, he probably ate some insect spirits, planted in some food by some cultists, and you know, he did like to eat cats, so there's that too. But it was the bugs. The bugs. Did it. The bugs.
Right. Now, of course, some people who were there claim to have seen something else. This next clip is not as easy for me to dismiss, and I had to treat a favor to get it, so I hope you appreciate it, Crows. Lim Duel and I have not had the greatest history, but he is reliable and doesn't mess around. But you know me, Crows. I'll burn every bridge in the world in pursuit of truth. Listen up.
Opti, I swear, if I didn't owe you one, I don't understand why you feel the need to broadcast all this dreck out to listeners. It's ridiculous. We are shadow runners. Do you understand that the word shadow... We're in the shadows. The truth is never meant to be brought to the light. Alright. I'm doing this because I owe you. Understand, this makes us even. The next fragging doe-eyed idealist you send after me with a microphone is coming back to you as a reanimated corpse. But where are you going? No. Hey! I said I was going to do it. You sit down. Is it recording? Good. Now, Dunkelson, dead, assassinated. How fracking stupid are you? Dunkelson is a great dragon. Do you know what that means? Let me educate you. A great dragon. A being whose lifespan exceeds our recorded history. A being of incredible power, of any kind you can imagine, who has risen up the ranks of political intrigue, the likes of which the timetables of their plans go beyond centuries, millennia. They have greater wealth, greater power than you could possibly imagine, even on a magical scale. Imagine initiate grades far beyond what we would even consider, even in the double digits. Fools, Dunkelson is not dead. One does not simply assassinate a great dragon. At least, not without a battle that would leave an entire city, not just a small section of it, in ruins. I'm not sure exactly what his plan was. Its plan was. Or where it is now. But likely to some sort of metaplane. Higher plane of existence, possibly transcending his form, otherwise just traveling through and away. His will enough is proof of that. How much meddling that's left in his wake. But listen to this. Dunkelson is not dead. There's been churches that have arisen, plans that have been enacted that were set in motion by these events. But Dunkelson, you mark my words, is not dead. His plans are still being carried out.
to this day. His influence continues even greater while we imagine him to be deceased. Is that good enough? There you go, you've got my opinion. Go ahead and broadcast it to the masses, but know this. We're Shadowrunners. Stick to the shadows. The truth has never been meant for the light of day. Leave it in the darkness where it belongs.
Lim Duel, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks. I think. Now, it is true that there are witnesses that claim to have seen Dunkelzahn's astral form flying up and entering or even forming the rift. But most of those who said that, to be honest, have never seen what a dragon's astral form looks like, so I'm not willing to bank on those. For everyone who saw something spooky and magical, there's someone else who swears there is another explanation. Truth is, although Dunkelzahn was a dragon, and I personally think it would have been a tragic precedent to set to have a dragon in political office, Big D was a chummer. He was one of the good guys. I don't say that often. Even given what happens afterwards, I'll have to admit, I liked him. I liked him a lot. I haven't talked all that much about it, but he was a regular on Shadow Talk, and pissed off all the other dragons and uppity elves by telling the truth they didn't want you to hear. And you know I like that. Yes, he was ancient. Yes, he was powerful. Yes, he had more money than you or I or anyone on the planet will ever see. And yes, he was probably manipulative. But he did good stuff, Crows. He tried to make the world better. He tried to make himself better. And now that he's gone, I don't mind saying I wish he was still around. Do I wish he was president? No. Would he have been the best president that we've had so far? Yes. But now that I think about it, I don't think anybody should be president, do I? That's what you get when you ask an anarchist about politics. We gotta move on before my allergies cause my eyes to water. Let me gain my composure and take a soy antihistamine while you listen to my Oh My Fringe here recollect about where he was when the deed went down.
Hello, I'm Fringe, and I've run the shadows all over the UCAS, from New York to Seattle to the freshly reopened Chicago Containment Zone. You probably know, Little Crows, that Dunkelzahn's death reverberated through the shadows, especially with the later release of his will. I was caught up in one of the secondary effects during that time, when it got real ugly in the city of Boston. Back in 57, when I still had my hair, I was going by the street name Rev, a name someone gave me as short for Reverend. I was working as a priest during the day and dabbling in the shadows at night to try to help people out when I could. Nothing big, nothing noisy, just a side job here and there, and maybe the thrill of being a big bad Shadowrunner. My team was one of those teams that usually gets chewed up and spit out when the shadows get too dark. There was Sunset, the trid pretty face girl in Decker, Azif, a chromed-up Sammy with a curiosity for all things occult, and Screamer, a rocker girl with a penchant for ripping people's faces off. We were all dabblers at that time, and they were rich kids with all the shiny gear their money and connections could get. I fit in with the group mostly because I brought the magical talent to the table. The night Dunkelzahn was inaugurated as president, the four of us had been brought into Boston for a run. Back then, it was all the rage for the corps to bring in out-of-town runners to play their games. One of those games, and the one for which we were hired, was to pull an old switcheroo, to steal an item from a lab at MIT&T, and replace it with a copy. Thankfully, it wasn't in the Department of Thaumaturgy. Trust me, they work on some weird stuff there, and their building has wards all over the place. Anyway, when we got there, I found us the window around the patrolling spirit. Sunset got us around the cameras and mag locks, and Azif and Screamer covered us. We switched out the item for the fake, and we got out of the building without a hitch. Then things went sideways. As we got to the van, we started hearing chanting in the distance. Azif mistook it for a spell being cast and freaked out. Of course, he'd be the one driving the van. Not all of us were in the van, and he slammed into Sunset as he tried pulling a J-turn. I yelled at him to stop the van, but as he floored it instead, driving over her body. I dropped out of the van in a tuck and roll before the van got up to speed, spraining a wrist, but otherwise coming out of it okay. Sunset wasn't so lucky, because she'd been thrown several meters, landed exactly in the wrong way, and cracked her head wide open on the pavement. She'd died before the van rolled over her, and now I was left standing there over her body as Azeef and Screamer sped off as fast as the van would carry them. I summoned a spirit to carry Sunset's body to help conceal our escape, and to wash away the bloodstain from the parking lot as much as possible, while I sterilized the area and wiped away the astral signatures. As we left campus, I found out what was causing the chanting sounds. The news was out that Dunkelzahn had just been assassinated, and Boston had just exploded into rioting. Being out-of-towners, none of us had known just how tense things were between the various racial and ethnic factions. In addition to the usual humans versus metahumans drac, there were huge problems between humans and elves in Boston's large Irish population. Same as the strife in Shin-Anoog, just transplanted. And we couldn't have anticipated that someone would actually kill the dragon and touch off a citywide riot in Boston. I never saw Azeef or Screamer alive again. Azeef had driven our van straight into one of the riots, killing three people and escalating the violence in the area. According to the news accounts I'd heard later, the two of them killed another half dozen rioters while they were being dragged from the van and beaten to death. Learn the lessons of my mistakes, little crows. Train as a team for what happens when the weird dreck hits the oscillator. And be extra careful if you're running with someone who's not ready for it. Oh, and by the way, keep an eye or an agent out for the news so you don't trip over current events.
Thanks, Chummer. At any rate, this magical rift that opened up over the scene of the president's death started acting pretty strange soon. Some of the mages that were investigating it in their astral forms were sucked right in, never seen again. As a result, astral warning signs and physical barriers were put in place to prevent any further harm. The next day, as per protocol, VP Kyle Hefner gets made the next president. If you thought the riots were bad when Big D was elected, they were nothing compared to the absolute chaos which erupted that day. Both corporate and national security forces were out in strength. The day after, on August 11th at Lake Louise, a funeral is held for the draconic president. On August 12th, President Hefner nominates his candidate for vice president, Nadia Dvar, former voice of President Dunkelzahn. That next week, lots of awakened folk and other metahumans are submitted by President Hefner for appointments in his cabinet. The first thing Hefner does as president is to form the Scott Commission in order to investigate President Dunkelzahn's death. Their first meeting was on August 25th, and they began hearings on September 5th. Following the lead of his predecessor and mentor, Hefner spearheads a change to the 14th Amendment to let sentient non-metahumans and probationary citizens to obtain system identification numbers. And in one last big change in the UCAS for 2057, a new national flag is created. The Scott Commission quickly clears President Hefner off the list of potential suspects for Dunkelzahn's murder, and Congress moves fairly quickly to start approving Hefner's cabinet nominees. Now, there's some pretty big dreck I left out about Dunkelzahn so far. A few days after Ms. Dvar was nominated vice president, she returned to the Watergate Hotel in D.C. and did two things of note. First, she read the will of President Dunkelzahn. Second, she established the Draco Foundation. Now, as much as I'd like to read the whole will for you all, I'm afraid I don't have the time or the stamina. It's pretty lengthy and can be boring at times. But there were some world-changing sentences that I wouldn't want you to miss. Even so, I don't think now is the time. Look for some more info on that later. Better yet, see if you can track down what Captain Chaos had to say about it back in the day. It was only about a week later that he uploaded a direct ton of Shadow info about Big D and his will onto Shadowland. For our purposes, you need to know that in making his will public, and, frag, even having a will, he went against the custom of dragonkind. One more reason to like old Darktooth. The hordes of dragons were supposed to be divided up between other dragons, to keep the power in the family, as it were. But President Dragon gave all of his wealth away to a great many others. Many individuals, some companies, even some dragons, and still more he used to form endowments and other corporations, foundations, and other gifts and rewards based on some achievement or other. Part of the will was the formation of the Draco Foundation, whose chairperson was none other than Nadia Dvar. Also importantly, Miles Lanier received a good deal of stock from the will and as a result left Fuchi and joined the board of Renraku. On September 3rd, the Draco Foundation starts doing its thing at its DC headquarters. The rich and powerful show up and forced to see what was left to them. I should say it wasn't just the rich and powerful that got stuff. In fact, often enough, the things that were received by the rich and powerful of the Sixth World didn't always have the effect that they wished. They were just the ones who showed up. In November, the Draco Foundation starts to hold monthly distribution meetings of the items in the president's will. Finally, near the end of the year, this guy by the name of David Emerson starts to worship Dunkelzahn as a great savior of the world and forms this cult around himself called the Children of the Dragon. I hear that Elvis and Jet Black are members. When some wild-eyed, six-foot-tall maniac named Emerson grabs your attention, taps the knuckles of his favorite hand up against your forehead, looks you crooked in the eye, and asks you if you've accepted Dunkelzahn as your personal lord and savior, you just stare that big sucker right back in the eye, and you remember what old Shaman Opti always says at a time like that. Have you accepted Dunkelzahn as your savior, Opti? No, sir. My savior is the truth. And it can be yours too, little crows, but there isn't any time left to discuss the initiation rituals because there is still more in 2057 to talk about, and because you have already wasted an entirely good slot of time listening to the Anarchy and Podcasting Network. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Unanunium 88. This was the Neo-Anarchist Podcast, and I'm your host, the delightfully decadent and decently derivative data detective, dealing discreetly during disaster, dancing with devils, daring darkness to duel, and drinking dangerous drams of dwarven draught, Opti! Enjoy your freedom. But remember, it's a sword that cuts both ways.